The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KYRS, its management, or its underwriters.
We are the zombie nation. On any given day, we wander the landscape of this modern life, feeding the compulsions that lash our souls. We are driven to be successful, get that promotion, get the latest greatest thing that will give us that latest greatest fling. But our glazed eyes are shuttered, squinting in the glare of reality. Every living system on earth is in decline. Our fears and our quest for security are breeding and feeding the terror of the now and of the future. We are isolated, lonely, stressed out, hungry in spirit. We are the zombie nation. But what can we do to rouse ourselves from this terrible dream? We must speak up to ourselves and to each other. We must confront in ourselves the addictions of consumerism, militarism, and self-indulgence. We must try to become people and communities living lives of integrity, honest about our modern life and its bitter fruits, but looking to push our society toward greater justice, better community, genuine democracy, and sustainability. We must awaken the zombie nation. Zombie Nation. I'm your host, Brad Reed. It's been a couple weeks since I've been here. Last week I was helping teach the 7th Spokane Democracy School. The week before we had some connection problems with my guest that I'm hoping to have again on March 22nd. Today is March 8th, 2008. Unless you're listening to rebroadcast, which is going to be Tuesday, March 11th. And if you're listening on Tuesday, this is right in the thick of the spring fun drive here at KYRS. I will be on the air next Saturday, the 15th, live for the fun drive with a couple of guests, and so I'm looking forward to that. Zombie Nation is the show where we hope to look uncompromisingly, unflinchingly, critically at the culture that we're all a part of, a culture that keeps us addicted to and enslaved by its comforts and its conveniences, a culture which teaches us there is one narrative, there is one way of thinking, colonizes us into believing that, and so we also hope that Zombie Nation is a show where we can begin to think about exploring ways to form communities of resistance, to think about making connections with each other, to reinforce each other as we try and create a culture of disobedience that says no to this monolithic colonial narrative. I want to remind listeners again, because I've been off for a couple of weeks, the rebroadcast time of the show is now Tuesday mornings at 7, so you can listen to it if you're a regular listener of Democracy Now! In the morning. Tune in a little bit earlier, and you can hear Zombie Nation. And if you ever have a comment or a question or any ideas about the show, please email me at zombienation@kyrs.org. I want to start by mentioning a couple of things. Today's show is planned because of something which is happening Tuesday night in Spokane. Tuesday the 11th at 7:30. At the Magic Lantern Theater, there'll be a screening of a film called Up the Ridge, a U.S. prison story. And on the flyer, it says it's a shocking look inside the incarceration industry. There's also a disclaimer at the bottom which says, due to the graphic nature of this film, it's not recommended for children. And so on Tuesday evening from 7:30 until 9, the film will be screened and then a public discussion will follow. It's being sponsored by the November Coalition Foundation and Thousand Kites. That's what's driving today's show. My guest will be Nora Callahan, who is the executive director of the November Coalition up in Colville. Nora's been on the show a couple of times. And in fact, one of my earliest shows back when I went on the air in November of 2006, I believe this was in mid-December 2006, was about the prison industrial complex, a show that I called Incarceration Nation. And Nora was on at that time talking about all of the issues that go along with this rapidly expanding prison industrial complex. And the timing is quite fortuitous because just in the last week, the Pew Center on the States released a report that says, as of right now, one in 99 adults in this country is in jail. And so the issues that arise from that, the way in which we view or perhaps ignore the prison industrial complex, all in the name of criminal justice and law enforcement, all of those I hope to address in my conversation with Nora today. I've also been involved in many conversations in the last couple weeks, and I want to make a comment at the end of the show about the relationship between today's topic and these other conversations, which by and large have been almost exclusively focused on the nature of the political map in this country, specifically the nature of the Democratic presidential campaign. And I think if anything reinforces today's the theme of Zombie Nation, it's today's show, that while we are sort of distracted and lured away from real issues like the warehousing of human beings, then we focus on things that in the larger sense don't speak to the foundational mechanisms of social control that this country is about. So I hope today's show about the prison industrial complex, about the issues that the film Up the Ridge raises, will be a good one, and we'll be right back after this song.
Stay in your toes, cause ain't no blessing us. Corrupt pigs arresting us, oppressing us, oppressing us. Talking in the youth cause of the ways they be dressing up. Rolling up squadron deep, man, they be testing us, depressing us. I feel like popping shots at they vest cause they be stressing us. Police serve the rich, they ain't protecting us. All they do is spy on the poor and they be checking us. That's why we try to vote for a press, they don't be letting us. How you gonna tell me we be rocking the vote? Stop with the jokes cause Bush lost and he won it. Like all of a sudden, what's everybody's mental? A recount only in one state in the whole continental, and his younger brother is the governor. Is that coincidental? Give him the house, then your man's acting homicidal. Going to war with his father's rival. He got the seat to bring trouble and war. For God's sake,
ain't a damn thing changed. Same year, different number. My people are still oppressed. Ain't no wonder that the beast keeps killing. Police keep killing, and they keep building up more prisons for them to fill them. Ain't a damn thing changed, same year, different number. My people are still oppressed. Ain't no wonder that the beast keeps killing. Police keep killing, and they keep building up more prisons for them to fill them.
Now the man really got us with the Patriot Act. There's no more right to privacy, just face it as facts. Hip-hop police watching me to get me with a sneaking peek. Catch me with illegal heat, or maybe just snipe me to make my whole cerebral leap. Don't let no one else know. I think the Fed struck Murder, Inc. with COINTELPRO. People need to watch what they say up in the cell phone, cause Big Brother's eavesdropping, hearing my lyrics while the beat's popping. I need to stop before I need Cochran. Who gives a damn about a Bush up attacking when the pigs murder Nathaniel Jones in Cincinnati? R.I.P. to Stansbury. Nowadays make a man worry. Cops are unreliable, murdering a black man, they call it just a Bible. The system's a machine based on capitalism. We're number one in the whole world for packing the prisons. Blacks and Hispanics the victims. Damn nationalism, we lacking the wisdom, it's chaotic. Two towers go down and now we patriotic. God bless the U.S., now isn't this dramatic? The rest of Earth hates us cause we ain't diplomatic.
Ain't a damn thing changed, same year, different number. My people are still oppressed. Ain't no wonder that the beast keeps killing. Police keep killing and they keep building up more prisons for them to fill them. Ain't a damn thing changed, same year, different number. My people are still oppressed. Ain't no wonder that the beast keeps killing. Police keep killing and they keep building up more prisons for them to fill them.
They call it Homeland Security, I call it New World Order. Police state, new chapter, new disaster. Cold red, cold yellow, cold orange. Every day I stay a high.
Welcome back to Zombie Nation. We're joined now on the phone by Nora Callahan, who is the executive director of the November Coalition in Colville. We just had a technical difficulty. I'll be right back.
Give food to eat, but not the true elite. Now they're getting more richer, but the media won't let the public see the whole picture. And rap's been taken over by the corporations. Got the hood brainwashed, causing disorganization. Feeding the children lies, to them it's entertainment. To us, it's education in the form of inspiration. Ain't a damn thing changed, same year, different number. Our people are still oppressed. Ain't no wonder that the beast keeps killing. Police keep killing, and they keep building up more prisons.
Okay, we're back, and I think the problem will be rectified. We're joined now on the phone by Nora Callahan, who is the executive director of the November Coalition up in Colville. Nora, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I told listeners in the open to the show that the primary reason that we wanted to do today's show
First came up because of the screening of the film Up the Ridge Tuesday night, which your group is co-sponsoring along with Thousand Kites.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, and I also mentioned that this, of course, is perfect timing because of the Pew Center report that made national headlines about a week ago. All the issues that you work on, both in terms of the drug war and the prison industrial complex, are raised up by these two things. So if we could start, if you could talk a little bit about the film and the discussion afterward that you hope to engage with folks on Tuesday night.
Yes. Well, Terry Sloyer, who is an attorney with the Center for Justice, is going to moderate the public discussion following the film, which is about 60 minutes long. And it's a story about what happened to a town in Appalachia who turned to prisons as an economic development plan. And basically, that's the nutshell of the story, and it just kind of unfolds on film. But I think what makes Up the Ridge a more interesting documentary for a person like me is it ends with showing what citizens did to correct some of the problems. Mm-hmm. People directly impacted by what happened in Appalachia had some victory. So it shows people mobilizing as well, not just the problem, but what the solution can be. But sadly to say, it's not suitable for children. We want to make sure people realize, you know, there are some gruesome images and discussions that aren't suitable for children. Sad to say, but, you know, the imprisonment problem, when you look inside a prison, it's not something you want to show to children. It's very traumatic.
And I went to the website of the film and noticed that as I watched the trailer, you mentioned this is a town that turned to the prison industrial complex as a way of economic development. There's a ceremony in which some of the guards are being given T-shirts, and I think the front has a picture of the complex, and on the back, the saying is the ultimate bed and breakfast. And we have housing and education and work training policies, only they exist in prisons. We don't do it for people of low income and moderate means, except we put them in jail and give them a place to live and a job training program, slave labor essentially, and maybe a chance at a modicum of education. But instead of focusing on the real issues, what we do is build prisons.
Yes. Well, today I was able to have a letter published in the newspaper, and I'm sure it's going to create a flurry of responses, you know, on both sides of the issue, which is good. You know, a public discussion is a great thing to finally have around imprisonment. Instead of, you know, just locking people away, we ought to talk about we're doing. But one of the points I make is when we build a prison or jail, we're taking our tax dollars and our investment is in punishment. Because the longstanding statistical data out by not only the Pew Center of Research, but a lot of different groups. We have a whole section of research and reports on our website at november.org. And there's been a flurry of them this year. But mostly what they point to is we have the same crime rate now as we did before we had a prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Another way of saying it is your chances of being victimized by crime are the same now as before we had a prison industrial complex. The only difference now is that we have to pay to upkeep and maintain and keep filling prisons. And if that weren't enough, not having any effect on public safety, they're asking for more, even still more. Now, if we look at economics in this, sad to say, again, statistically, when unemployment rates go up, so do criminal rates very often. And that's probably going to be left out of the discussion. So communities, it's very important because prisons are built on the income of the taxpayers at present. But all that's changing now so fast. They're talking, you know, the big R word, recession.
Right.
So where will Spokane be in 2 years? And if you vote to expand all the policing, are you going to be able to pay for it? And what if we put up basketball hoops and hired mentors instead?
Uh-huh. And how many studies have there been that talk about, and you just alluded to this, building prisons, increasing police force, have no real effect on crime rates? In fact, there are studies mentioned in a couple of articles I looked at this week that say over the last 25 years, crime rates have been steadily falling. And yet, at the same time, the Pew Center report says that in the last 20 years, spending state by state and nationwide on prisons has increased by 4.5 times.
Yes, it has no correlation. The prison system, in another report that was released November 2007 called Unlocking America, has statistics that broaden that discussion to actually wonder, you know, speculate on the question, does it drive the incarceration rate?
Mm-hmm.
And just the policies of having these in prisons, does it make for more crime? And they're beginning, researchers are beginning to look at cities and make a correlation to crime rate, violent crime, and the amount of policing. And then what happens when communities are over-policed in one instance can be under-enforced in others. For instance, a lot of property crime, minor property crime, we call minor property crime, isn't necessarily investigated and solved
mm-hmm.
because they're working on what police deem are more serious crime. Maybe sometimes that is drug crime. You know, they'll put a lot of resources into drug crime, but they won't be solving a lot of property crime. People aren't getting back their television sets. And they don't feel, and here's another point, is we're not having yet a discussion and should probably enter this word called restorative justice
mm-hmm.
into the picture, because we have this consultant, I'm sorry, I can't remember his first name, but his last name's Bennett, and David Bennett is his name, and he was hired by the county commissioners to study the problem of the jail situation in Spokane. And one of the programs he's seeming to want to move forward and have the citizens of Spokane look at is same-day justice, and I think I'm getting that right. It was in the paper in, I believe, February 14th, in the Spokesman Review, top headline article. But this program would take a suspect and sit them down with prosecutor and defense lawyer. But the problem with that is, there's a lack of due process. If it's just a suspect, they haven't even been charged with a crime.
Mm-hmm.
That this is skipping a whole step of our constitutional basis for law. I mean, it's due process that you be convicted. I mean, be charged with a crime and then defend yourself.
Right.
So they're talking this word suspect. And people need to be very suspect of that, because we have to look at this and say, well, to fix our jail problem, do we really have to give up more of our constitutional rights? And this is for our young people mostly, because that's who we put in prison. And then when we look at the prison stats, it's mostly young people of color or poor people.
Right, right.
So, you know, are we moving to a society that gives, you know, more and more power to people with resources and less?
You're listening to Zombie Nation on KYRS. I forgot to mention in the open of today's show that because our stream is back up, we're also simulcasting down on KRFP in Moscow, Idaho today. We're talking with Nora Callahan, the executive director of the November Coalition. It's headquartered up in Colville. Nora and the folks at the November Coalition are helping co-sponsor the screening of the film Up the Ridge, a U.S. prison story, this Tuesday, March 11th at the Magic Lantern Theater. One of the things I was going to make sure and mention, I mean, you just talked about young people being disproportionately, young people of color especially, disproportionately the ones that we throw in jail. The number from the Pew report is 1 in 99 adults in jail. But then this has been around, I think, for a year or two, and you would know that better than me, that the number triples if you talk about people who are somehow at some place in the criminal justice system under the control of the prison mechanism, either incarcerated or on probation or on parole. So you got 1 in 32, and it really comes home to me because I'm a high school teacher and class size is roughly 30. So I'm looking at one student out of every one of my classes looking forward to a future where they are in the control of the criminal justice system. And we don't ask the right questions, which is the one are the ones that you raise in your letter in this morning's paper. I mean, one of the things that you one of the most important things I think you ask is, what is public safety?
What is it?
Yeah, we have a very narrow prescribed answer to that, and I think the work that you guys do, and the Thousand Kites is trying to do, and Holler to the Hood, the work that the group that's helping put together Up the Ridge, you would have a very different answer to what is public safety. So, take that away if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I will. I'm 54 years old now, and I was a single mother raising two children pretty much just on my own. And it was a very difficult road. And I look back on those years and I think, what used to make me feel safe? What made me feel safe? Because I'm looking at this, the new economics, then the news, and it's, and I think of all the women that were in my shoes now that are looking at recession and their hopes and dreams, and they want to feel safe. But I know what made me safe back then. And it was when my bills were paid and I knew I had a roof over mine and my children's head and we had food and I knew that I was going to be able to do that another month. That made me feel safe. Not necessarily a police car coming down the road.
Right.
And because I have a community that builds safety in me. And I think that people need to ask, you know, what really makes you feel safe? You know, we need more of that. More of the things we know make us strong communities. And because when you feel safe, you act better. You know, when you don't feel comfortable about your future and you're insecure, people act out. I mean, psychologists talk about it all the time. So when we talk about our community and where are we going to put scarce tax dollars, we got to really think about what it is that's going to make us safe. Because maybe 10 years, we're not going to even be able to afford to keep a prison or a new, bigger jail, state-of-the-art and all that, open. But what if we had had something that truly added to the economic security of our community? Expanding the college classes available for young people that need to retrain in today's world, new world. What if we did that instead? How much would that cost? We know it doesn't cost as much as prison. Maybe 7 times less.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been studied for about 15 years, but I know 15 years ago, programs that diverted and created different kinds of opportunities instead of just punishment, you know, more restoration and training, that those things, treatment if a person was drug addicted, those things are just so much less expensive.
Well, and you've got, I mean, how many stories? I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I guess one of the things that I kind of hear in the back of my mind, given the political climate of the country in the last 20, 25 years, is, okay, Nora, that's all well and good. That's just that bleeding heart liberal crap that doesn't work because people are dangerous, there are bad people, and we have to protect ourselves from them. We see it in our foreign policy, right, because even in the Democratic presidential campaign, what you have is candidates resorting to fear. If you elect him, then you should be scared. If you elect me, then you can rest and have your children sleep safely at night. I mean, safety is so narrowly conscripted.
I think the politicians think it is, but the backlash is that all these people came to the polls and didn't vote any of the ways that people expected. And so, but the media is trying to say they weren't wrong. But they're, those are my dogs. They're just barking, you know. Saturday morning, they get to play outside.
Right.
So excuse the dark barking dogs. Yeah, I think the media is trying to make the public believe that strategy works. Because why are the candidates completely, I mean, every other day they're changing strategies. I mean, one day Hillary Clinton's crying, and the next day she's being very hard and angry. It's schizophrenic. They don't know what to do. I think that I really do still believe in the people in this country. And I believe that they're saying, no, we're not going to be afraid anymore. It doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore. Not the true people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had this tremendous outpouring in the caucuses, in the primaries.
So how
it was all unpredicted.
How do you answer that charge that is aimed to dismiss, because this thing you talk about, restorative justice, maybe even moving to the notion of prison abolition, and there's a ton of information out there about the prison abolition movement. How do you answer that when it's designed to dismiss it as feel-good, liberal, bleeding-heart stuff that doesn't have any connection to reality? I mean, you hinted at it because you talked about real people out there get it, that fear doesn't work. So can you talk about how this transcends typical sort of political distinction? It's not a liberal, bleeding-heart thing that people across the board get what's really at stake here?
I think it's transcended the liberal heart. Simply because if you look at the figures, a prison toilet costs $1,400. I mean, we're going broke in this nation. The country's money, you know, that they're holding on to in China, they're thinking, we're hearing they might offload this money. I think the average everyday American gets the idea that we are no longer necessarily the superpower. And the average everyday American can do math on, I mean, liberal heart bleeding. Okay, a lot of people want severe punishment. But when you start looking at 7 million people, you figure it's under some control of the police. They have 25 family members that kind of get it now. Wow, This is crazy. Those are millions and millions of people. The problem is prison people felonized in a lot of states can't vote. Like in Washington State, unless all your fines are paid, you can't get the right to vote back. That's poll tax.
Exactly.
So we have problems with having political power. But what's happened, and the reason why even President Bill Clinton sent a letter out last week saying, oh, how much he regretted not dealing with the crack cocaine injustice and disparity, when the Pew Research came out and said 1 in 99 Americans, Hillary Clinton got on the television and said, oh, my goodness, we have to look at imprisonment, as if she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
The eight
mm-hmm.
years they were in power is when a prison-industrial complex was built in America.
Exactly.
So what we have is a disconnect. I think people can do math. When it comes to, do you want to have elementary school and high school for your children, a realistic education, or are we just going to expand the jail next year?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what's going to come before the voters of Spokane in November.
And back to the Clintons, it was the Clinton administration that commissioned a report on treatment for drug offenses, and the findings of the report were that treatment was 5 times more effective in dealing with those
7
issues.
That's
the RAND study.
Yeah,
and that study never saw the light of day. They deliberately shelved it, and so now suddenly they're very aware when, you know, the public record is that they acted not, as you said. I mean, it was on their watch that this complex began to grow out of proportion.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things on the website for the film Up the Ridge talks about the shockingly, and this is why it's not suitable for children, but the shockingly brutal treatment of inmates that is exactly the same nature of what was happening in Abu Ghraib. And I want to use that to get to what you said, that there are certain people and segments of the society who still are for severe punishment. That, you know, this morning's paper, there's a piece about
Bush will veto the bill that has in it a ban on waterboarding. And so there is a segment, and he doesn't stand alone in this nation. I'm sure there are people on the left side of the political spectrum who think that severe punishment for these dangerous bad people is still necessary.
But most people in prison are not that dangerous or really that bad, and that's the discussion we're finally having. Who is really in prison? We have some really bad people in prison, true. But most people get out, and most people did something relatively minor.
Right, right. I think it was in 2004, again, you know this better than I do, but a Department of Justice survey, this is back on drug-related crimes, that black and Latino suspects were three times more likely to be stopped and searched, their cars torn apart for suspicion of drugs, and yet when stopped, white suspects were four times more likely to have this stuff.
And so, that was our stake.
Yeah, so who is this really aimed at?
Yes.
And what really are prisons for?
And that was true even in Eastern Washington when the population is predominantly white, and true in Seattle, where you have a more racial mix of people. So it was kind of, it's all over the place. Racism still exists in our country.
Absolutely.
And classism exists. And as more people fall out of the middle class, is when we're going to see a great awakening. I think I have great hope. I have great hope over the next years that as people fall out of the middle class, they will activate because they have no choice but to really get their country back, you know, to have economic prosperity and not to make it based on a war economy, on a prison economy. Because we face terrible times. I mean, the world, it faces problems we have to fix, our dependence on oil. How can we fix that? How do we take Spokane? You know, we're in a perfect area to be able to build our economy around green industries and sustainable things. And we're looking at building more what our county commissioner, when Stevens County put the vote for a new jail in 2004 before the voters, by the way, they voted against it 2-1, which is a good thing because the way the economics are going, we probably couldn't have paid for it. I mean, it would have just been such a disaster for us. But at any rate, the county commissioner at one point had to say, it was Malcolm Friedman, said, I know I'm asking us to build another monument to failure. But that's what they are. And we need to do better than that now. This is the time. I mean, we really don't have a lot of money ahead to waste.
You're listening to Zombie Nation on KYRS, simulcast today down in Moscow on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow. We're talking with Nora Callahan, the executive director of the November Coalition, about the prison industrial complex and directly connected to the screening of the film Up the Ridge, a U.S. prison story, which will be shown this Tuesday, March 11th at 7:30 at the Magic Lantern Theater. Nora, the last time I had you on the show was in the context of your attending the U.S. Social Forum, and we talked about the seemingly not apparent connection between the work you do against the prison industrial complex and the typical issues of sustainability. And there was a piece in the Inlander in mid to late February called Life on the Block, which is you have a link to on your website. If listeners want to check that article out, they don't have a copy of that issue of the Inlander, you can go to november.org and click on Life on the Block. But there's a passage in the article about this need in Kootenai County to have inmates work at the solid waste transfer station north of Post Falls. They're talking about up to 200 inmates sorting through the solid waste to take out the recyclables because they can't have all the plastic and the aluminum and that stuff in the waste stream. But what goes along with that is the need to build all the infrastructure that goes with 200 inmates and all the people that are designed to watch them. And they want to build this thing right over the aquifer. And so if you could talk a little bit more about the connections between this system of human warehousing that we have committed ourselves to and what that does. You've mentioned I think, pretty eloquently the issue of economics and why we're at a critical point. We can't afford this stuff anymore.
Yeah, we can't afford it. Well, on that issue, in that same article, what should jump out to readers is that the beginning of the article, it talks about who's in the Spokane jails, and it's largely mentally ill people being mm-hmm. recycled in and out because there's no insane asylum to put them in anymore. And so that's what we have to look at, is no, we don't want insane asylums, but prisons aren't the answer. And to take the mentally ill, put them into a center and make them sort garbage, and in the interim you destroy the aquifer, it's just stupid.
Yeah, it quotes the jail commander, Captain Jerry Brady, and I'm not using his name out of context. It's in the Inlander piece. It's all over for public record. It quotes the jail commander saying welcome to a young new inmate and welcome to, quote, the third largest mental institution in the state of Washington, unquote.
Correct.
And this is the Spokane County Jail.
Well, even civil servants are at the point where they want change. I mean, I'm sure that this officer never thought that that's what he was going to do, was to work mm-hmm. in a mental asylum. And
right.
What about the young man, I think, in the same article who couldn't sleep all night because he had to be in the cell with a young man who had just slaughtered his parents?
Right, right. He was a cellmate of...
he was terrified to fall asleep.
Right, a Brian Kim, right.
Yes. And see, those are the situations. Now, how long, you know, that this person... young person, you know, will likely get over that trauma, but, you know, maybe some won't. What if
right.
it's two mentally ill person they put in the cell? So civil servants themselves are very frustrated because they don't see what they're doing is right either, but it's a time when the public can come together with their leaders and have a good discussion. So what we're really hoping is not only, I mean, we would like jailers to come and watch this movie, and the chief of police, Ann Kilpatrick, to come out and watch the movie and discuss it with us.
Mm-hmm.
But we really want also people who feel they've been victimized by a society that wants to punish too much instead of help fix the problem. I know a lot of parents, rather than see their children off to Martin Hall to possibly be gang raped for the summer, would rather that child have to work and pay back the damage they did to the neighbor's house when they smashed the window and replaced the television and restore this person to society and their neighbors and their community, not traumatize them and have someone who is forever broken on our hands.
One of the things that I think is one of the hidden questions in the room when we talk about, call it criminal justice, call it law enforcement, whatever we call this, the notion that, and this goes back to these dangerous people, but my question is, in the work that you do, how you get past this hidden assumption that certain things are better out of sight, out of mind. I mean, you talked about you think people are getting it in a new way, but how do you get past the belief that we're all conditioned to have, that there are certain people who, I mean, say the kid who smashes the neighbor's house, he just needs to go be put away for a while. I know the work that you do is directly designed to challenge that. So what do you find that in your work has worked to convince people, besides the economics, because I think that's a huge one, but what gets past the psychological barrier that we just want certain people off our radar screens?
I think more and more people have someone they know and love who've been pretty much chewed up by a criminal justice system. I don't think it's that we've necessarily convinced so many people to think differently, but they've experienced for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So
I think a lot of the awakenings are around people. You know, the guy that loses his job and finds himself down on his luck and drunk or drug addicted for a while, trying to, you know, numb the pain of losing a job, you know, they can pick up the newspaper and see the idea that despair can cause people to do things they shouldn't do. I think that what has happened in America, well, the Pew Center doing this research another good question is, why are so many mainstream foundations putting out so much about the imprisonment situation right now?
Right.
I believe it's because they know we're going into such economic straits that we can't afford to do this.
And the Pew Center is not one of those left-leaning, liberal-bleeding heart organizations.
No.
I mean,
these are insurance companies
right.
who want a return on their on this problem. They don't want to be paying out. You know, and back to some of the ridiculous things we're going to be reading right now, like the iPod crime is raising our violent crime rates. Did everybody get to read that in our newspaper last week?
I'm not sure, but I myself missed it, so can you talk a little bit about
that? Well,
it
was in there. They said that there's so many iPods being stolen, and because the kind of crime that is, it's a personal property violation. That is recorded as a violent crime. And that might be skewing crime rates, is the amount of iPods that are stolen. Another good thing to remember is, you know, how many kids admit to their parents they lost their iPod and they're getting reported stolen anyway. You know, that's part of the equation. But aside from that, is that some of the ridiculousness that we're hearing right now is things like iPod thefts might be skewing crime rates we are going to view in the next few months as going up.
And you've got in Spokane, and I'm still not sure how much of this to believe is hard fact, the belief in, among many sectors in the city, that we have a raging gang problem, so much so that the police force will become even more militarized with automatic weapons that that are only good in you know, battle situations. I mean, when you've got the theft of an iPod, which is, what, between $100 and $250, and that becomes violent crime, I guess that shows on the other side of what you've been saying, the lengths to which certain people will go to maintain this ridiculous colonial system.
Well, as people, we really have to look at all the statistics and all the reports and all the research coming down the pike, and it is good to say, well, who did this research?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Who's telling us this, and why? You know, and is it frivolous? Because maybe the iPod thing is a big issue. You know, I kind of was dismissive about it in my editorial, but if it's going to drive a violent crime rate, then we got to look at it and
right.
say, oh, my goodness, this is kind of silly. But anyway, it is, it's just a real serious issue because imprisonment, again, I want to reiterate, a toilet and a jail cost $1,400. And can we afford it?
Right, and even, I guess the next question that comes from that is, how much do we believe that if you have a jail, the people in it deserve basic human dignity, and so they would, I mean, I can imagine sectors of this society saying, well, these are violent people, these are bad people, we don't even deserve a toilet. So, I mean, it raises all kinds of issues, which goes to the heart of
well, in Spokane, mostly they're mentally ill.
Mm-hmm,
the
others
have said so themselves. So the punisher, the people that want to vote to punish and get tougher in the Spokane and Inland Northwest need to realize, well, on who? Sick and insane.
Exactly.
People.
Right.
People that need our care.
Right. And you alluded to Brian Kim, the most recent high-profile case, and I don't know because I'm not a psychiatrist and did not talk to or examine him, but every indication of what I saw of that case, here is a young man who has got serious mental issues, and his sentence won't deal with that at all, and so he will go into a system that warehouses him and does nothing for what's really at root behind.
And it was interesting that there was no real discussion on what happens to a young child that's put on powerful psychotropic pharmaceuticals
then
change their drugs and different drugs, and no wonder these young people say, I don't want to take those drugs.
Right.
They get online, they read the side effects, and you know, anyone who doesn't understand the issue, just pretend you're 13 years old and you're taking 5 pharmaceutical drugs. What that's like.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the discussions we need to have, too, because, and there's other ones, there's ties into the Iraq War. These young men and women are coming back traumatized from the war. They're turning to street and pharmaceutical abuse to numb pain. You know, the psychiatrists mm-hmm. call it self-medicating.
Right.
And then what are we going to do with them? We're going to shuffle them in to sort trash down in Kootenai County?
Right, exactly.
Is that what we do after they serve our country?
Yeah.
Is that how we support our troops?
Right, and what kind of vision do we what kind of vision do we have for a community, and what does community mean? I'm grateful for your time today and the work you do. I'm going to recommend listeners find a copy of this morning's Saturday Spokesman Review to read Nora's letter to the editor. Go to November.org and check out the November Coalition website. You can find links to a ton of great things. The co-sponsoring organization of the film Tuesday Night is Thousand Kites, and their website is thousandkites.org. And one last reminder, Tuesday evening, March 11th, 7:30, at the Magic Lantern Theater, the screening of the film Up the Ridge, a U.S. prison story. As Nora said, it's a film about a specific prison in Appalachia, but the issues it raises transcend geographic areas. Let's not believe that this would only happen there, because it happens everywhere. Nora, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
We'll hope to talk again soon.
And great radio station. We love Thin Air. Have a donation coming, by the way.
All right.
You guys are awesome.
We start our
Thank
fun drive
so
next week.
Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you, Nora. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Today's programming is underwritten in part by support from Ironworkers Local 14, who helped construct KYRS's broadcast tower. Ironworkers Local 14, providing Inland Northwest contractors with skilled journeymen and apprentices since 1902.
Welcome back to Zombie Nation. I want to thank Nora Callahan again for her time today and the work that the November Coalition does. It's one of the best, unfortunately, I think one of the best kept secrets in this area. You've got an organization with national and international scope doing, I think, terribly meaningful work up in Colville. And it kind of reinforces what Nora herself said, that this transcends typical political boundaries. You've got the stereotype of Stevens County, where Colville sits. It's the county seat, being sort of
redneck and white conservative, and yet the organization, the Levemmer Coalition, based in Colville, is doing the same important, meaningful work that typical liberal organizations, perhaps of color, and they link up all the time. They're part of coalitions across the country. And I'll just mention again, probably another couple times before we go out today, the screening of the film Up the Ridge, a U.S. prison story, this Tuesday, March 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the Magic Lantern Theater. And the Magic Lantern is at 25 West Main in the new Saranac building. The film will be screened, and then following that, there'll be a discussion among those who are there about the issues it raises. Nora mentioned it would be great to have folks who work in the jail system, police folks there. I'd also encourage as many what we would call civilian folks to be there, because the more people become aware of this, the more chance we have to build something that's broad-based, that demands leadership follow the lead of the rest of us. That's how change happens, I think. That's how movements work. I also want to remind folks that if you're listening on Tuesday morning, this is the second day of KYRS's Spring Fun Drive. So I hope that if you get a chance, you give a call and pledge your support to this radio station. It's been an important experience for me to be on the air and to explore issues and talk with people like Nora, like all the guests I've had in the last year and a half, to hopefully raise issues from a perspective that doesn't get heard very often in the Spokane listening area. And now that we're back online, hopefully this message is being transmitted, can't think for a minute, beyond the Spokane area. I mentioned at the beginning of the show some thoughts I'd had recently about what has dominated left discussion circles, at least in my experience, the last couple weeks or month. And then the issue of today's show, and Nora and I talked about it briefly. Most of the discussion has been focused on the Democratic presidential campaign and who will be the best choice to have the best chance to change the direction of the country following the 8 years of the Bush regime, the lawlessness of the Bush regime. And in some ways, I completely understand where that focus comes from. My wife, Laura, is an alternate delegate for Barack Obama as a result of her experience at the caucus. I have good friends, family members who are devoted to watching this, caring very deeply about it. And I understand that, and it is something which I have myself have followed, perhaps not as fervently, but nonetheless followed anyway. There's some degree of it that tells me that, and I forget where the quote came from, that the Democratic presidential nominating process is one more example of giving us the masses bread and circuses to distract us from the real issues. Because what you won't hear in the campaign is discussion of the very thing that Nora talked about today. The very fact that we cannot afford to continue growing the prison industrial complex the way in which we have the last 20, 25 years. What's important to notice about this is that in the Pew Center report that Nora and I talked about that appeared in the Spokesman Review, there are now four states, and Oregon is one of them, that spend more on prisons, on incarceration, than they do on higher education. In the time period the Pew Center focused on in the last 20 years, spending nationwide went from $11 billion on prisons to $49 billion. In that time period, the increase was six times more than the increase in spending on higher education. You will not hear that discussed in a presidential campaign. You will not hear discussed that the prison industrial complex is a mechanism of social control, largely to control people of color. If the drug war, which is a tool of the prison industrial complex, were really about stopping drugs, then it would focus on where the drugs are. You will not hear that discussed in the presidential campaign. And so the discussion about what the Democrats will do and what will happen in Michigan and Florida and the superdelegates, don't get me wrong, these issues are relevant and they occupy, I think, a legitimate focus of people's attention. I guess my point is that to some degree they over-occupy our time. And the function of life in this world, in this modern world right now, is that people only have so much energy and so much time. And so if we are focused on what Michigan will do and will Florida, you know, drag its feet and not have a revote, what we're ignoring is the rampant exploitation and warehousing of human beings in an industry that goes unchecked. The work that the folks of the November Coalition do, and Thousand Kites and Holler to the Hood, which is an organization based in Kentucky, and all those groups around the country who work on a different vision of what public safety means. I think Nora's question is a great one. What does public safety mean? I think it's the same kind of question that we should ask. What does national security mean? National security does not mean freedom from terror. It does not mean who will be the toughest and who will amp up the war in Afghanistan and who will withdraw troops from Iraq first. National security has to do with the conditions that are met when people are fed and clothed and housed and given a good education. That you will not hear discussed in a presidential campaign. It is our job to raise those issues. It is the responsibility of those of us who believe in a different vision. And I'm not saying that we should disengage from the American electoral process. What I am saying is we cannot allow that to be our sole focus. The issues that underlie all of the surface stuff at the top of the presidential campaign are not going anywhere. There's a great piece on the web, a routine by George Carlin, which is not radio friendly because he uses too many of the words that you can't say on the radio. But one of the things that he says is the politicians don't matter. The guys who run the place, the owners of this country, have it all planned out. I think he's exactly right. I think what happens is that we focus on those who don't matter. The ones who own the place, the ones who run this country, who actually own you and me, are very, very happy with the prison industrial complex spiraling upwards 6 times more than we spend on higher education. I think that is exactly the plan, and I think it is incumbent upon us who believe in a different vision, something more radical in reshaping the future, to not lose sight of that, to make sure we focus on the issues that matter. I thank you for listening to Zombie Nation. We'll be back next week with our Fun Drive show. I want to encourage folks, if they're not already members listening for the first time, give a call to the station to pledge your support. Go online. You can pledge your support online. This is a mechanism of social protest, perhaps even moving from protest to resistance. A lot of what we talk about on here is our mechanisms of social control. One of the things that KYRS does is give me and other voices a chance to talk about a different vision, to wrest control from the guys who run the place. Thanks for listening again. Call in if you're listening during the Fun Drive and pledge your support. See you next week. Peace.
KYRS LP Spokane.